This is the Frogcast. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.
Hello and welcome to the Frogcast. You can hear some excitement in my voice, and soon you'll hear some excitement in the voice of Trey and Daniel. And roughly about this time yesterday, we did not have that excitement in our voice as TCU was down 31-0 at halftime. But the game of the century, the game that will live in infamy, where the Horned Frogs came back and won in triple overtime, 47-41 over the Oregon Ducks, in the Alamo Bowl. Guys, we're going to dig into it deep, but just off the top of your head, Trey, wasn't that a hell of a lot of fun to see the Frogs win?
Yeah, man, it was amazing. And you were right. At halftime yesterday, I mean, it was there was a part of me that wanted to leave the game because I just did not think that I had, you know, a lot of doubt in my mind, and I just did not see us coming back from that deficit. And yeah, that was amazing. You know, I don't know. The Peach Bowl was awesome last year, just running, you know, Ole Miss out of the building. This year, much, you know, tighter game, which makes it, you know, obviously more stressful, more intense. And it was awesome, man. It was unbelievable. It was, I mean, obviously, like, I think I saw the stat on Twitter, like, the last, like 1,420 something teams that fell down 31 points lost. Like, it's just so improbable. Like, it was crazy.
It's absolutely improbable. And Daniel, we know that you don't take these things lightly and you don't handle a loss very well. You got to be excited after a big win like that.
Yeah, and I think the probability of coming back was like less than 1% or something. I glanced over some stuff and something around that, and then it's just, I couldn't believe we came right out into the second half and got it moving and got a couple passes, got some good yards, and it looked like a totally different team offensively. And I kept going, we kept scoring, and I was like, we're going to pull this off. And then something would, you know, stall out or something, and I was just like, you know, we're going to get close, but I just can't see it because it's so improbable. And but good Lord, they pulled it off, and just, it's just unreal. I mean, I pretty much just ran down the street screaming, and then till I couldn't anymore. So,
well, we'll read all about that in the police report in Parker County Sheriff, right, about you running down the street. Yeah, I mean, I was sitting down in the man cave, my whole family watched the game with me here in suburban Chicago, and it was as dark as could be at halftime. And by the time that game was over and we won in triple overtime, I was screaming. I was hugging my son. I was as excited as can be. We'll dig down and compare it to some other high moments here in a moment. But that has got to be one of the highest points in the history of the Gary Patterson program at TCU, not only because of the improbability of it, but because just all of the emotion, whether it be Cole Housen and so many other people in the events of this week, that win feels really, really good. Well, Trey, like you said, you were there at the Alamo Bowl. You traveled down. You got to go with some family. Got to get down there to the Riverwalk. You know, bowl games are unique. They try to still pitch these as something special, even though 5-7 teams from the Big Ten are filling up bowl rosters. What was it like to be there outside of the stadium, being with all of those Frogs, and being inside there at a game at the Alamo Bowl?
Yeah, it was fun. Really, the only negative really was Saturday. It just rained all damn day, like steady rain. So that kind of put a little bit of damper kind of on the, you know, activity outside of the stadium. There's a couple bars right there that we dipped into for a little bit, and they were packed full of fans for both teams, drinking and carrying on and all of that. And then inside the stadium, and I haven't watched the game really on TV yet. I saw a few highlights, but so I don't know if it came across on TV, but the atmosphere inside the stadium was really good. TCU fans, pretty much, you know, it was, I would say, 70-30, more like probably 80-20. I mean, Oregon had a few fans there, but there was a lot of purple. And, yeah, it was awesome inside the stadium. I'd never been to the Alamo Bowl before. I guess it's all right. You know, it's a little bit older. We had seats that we just bought our tickets through TCU. So ours, and I'm still like low on the priority point scale. So
your $1 million donation heading.
Yeah. So our seats were up on the third level, 12th row. And I could still see really good. So I didn't have any complaints there. And like I said, my section was cool. And you know, the TCU fans were really loud inside there. So it was awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what it sounded like inside of the Alamo Dome, but listening to it on TV, and I had the big speaker set up in my man cave, that foghorn sounded like it was right next to the microphone. I don't know if the acoustics in there made it seem louder than it really was, but man, every time they would score, every time they would force a turnover, that was a huge rallying cry to hear the foghorn there on the road. Was it as loud not only with the foghorn but with the fans inside of the stadium as it seemed watching it on TV?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got to watch the game over yet. I just saw a couple ESPN highlights, so I'm not sure. But inside, it was loud. I mean, it was – I don't know what's compared to necessarily, but it was one of the loudest TCU games I would say I'd been to, especially in the last couple years.
That's great. That's great. I'd love to see that we actually travel for a bowl game. Daniel, the halftime was probably one of the darkest moments I'd had since likely the Baylor game last year. It's 31-0 at half. You know, I'm not going to turn the TV off because I can't bring myself to do that, but everything inside of me wanted to. How dark was it for you at halftime? Describe what it was like being such a hardcore fan like you are and having to deal with such a punch in the gut of being down 31-0 at halftime.
I practically just had given up. You know, I was kind of thinking, all right, what else can I do? Got a new game on my Xbox I could go play. Things like that. Because I wanted to, it was just a gut punch. It was a huge letdown because we had a chance there was a chance Oregon could take that away, and that's fine because we lost Boykin and Oregon's a good team, but I never expected anything quite like that. So it was such a drastic beatdown compared to what I was expecting, even the worst that I was expecting, that I didn't know what to do. I just kind of started the old grieving process, and then I kept watching, though, just because I was like, all right, well, we'll see what happens, because I don't know of any coach that turns around a team at halftime like Gary Patterson. So I had to give him a shot, and then sure enough, they came right out of the gate, and it turned it around. And so, yeah, it was good. It was good from then on.
Yeah, it was. Trey, I love your honesty that you said you wanted to leave at halftime, and all I could think was if people hadn't spent thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars to travel down there, and it was just a home game, and we were getting curb stomped 31-0. That place would have emptied out.
Big time. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that place would have emptied out. Any other thoughts on halftime for you, Trey, about what it was like to be bottoming out as a Frog fan?
No, I mean, that pretty much sums it up. It was just disappointing, man. Like, I, you know, when all the Boykin stuff happened, that was so disappointing to start off with because, you know, I wanted to go to the game, obviously because I want to go to the game, but I wanted to see Boykin in a TCU uniform one last time. So I wanted to go see him play, you know, and I was excited, like we talked about, the Oregon matchup. I loved that. And so when the Boykin stuff happened, that was disappointing. And then, you know, we go into it, and I'm already, you know, thinking negatively, like, you know, I hope we can keep it closer. It, you know, I felt like the pressure was off, like, let's just go in. If we win, that's going to be great. So, you know, you just go into it, then it starts off so poorly, and you're just like, well, damn, this just sucks. This just really sucks. So I'm really glad it got turned around, though. But, yeah, it was not looking good there at halftime for sure.
Yeah, I am excited that we got to hear another story other than the incident and the arrest of Boykin, and that is Brom Kohlhausen. I have never seen a guttier performance from a young man whose results exceeded what anybody and their cousin thought that he could do. Trey, just being there and watching him get just the tar knocked out of him and then putting the team on his back, what was it like to not only know some of the backstory that we know now for Bram, but to see him take this team, dig us out of the biggest ditch in who knows how many years, and get this win? What was it like to watch Kohlhausen there at the Alamo Bowl?
Well, first I want to start with, going into the game, once Boykin was out, I was more in favor of starting Foster Sawyer just because, you know, Kohlhausen is the senior, so I could see where people would say, you know, he is the senior, give him the snaps, his last game, but I was more of the mindset of, hey, let's put Sawyer in so we can see a little bit more of what he has, you know, I mean, we'll talk about this later on, but obviously we're kind of assuming Kenny Hill is going to be the quarterback next year. But hey, you know, let's get Sawyer some big game bowl experience and see what he's got. At least, you know, let him start and see how it goes. So when they said Kohlhausen was starting, I was like, all right. And then the first half was so poor. And so I'm like, all right, well, maybe Sawyer will come in the second half. And they stick with Bram. And obviously that was a smart decision. Obviously our offensive coordinator saw something or knew something or, you know, figured he was the best guy for the job. And yeah, man, I mean, you can use all those sports cliche words, gutty, you know, tough, you know, legendary, all of those to describe. I mean, to come back from 31 points, like if you would have told me that, I would have thought you were crazy. And then if you told me that Kohlhausen is your quarterback who's going to lead you from 31 points down, especially just if you watch that first half, it wasn't, you know, very good. And yeah, man, it's crazy. And he now goes down, you know, like in TCU history as, you know, the guy who led them back on their biggest comeback ever against a damn good team too, not just a scrub team. And I know they lost their quarterback, but Oregon is a damn good team, and to come back on them like that, it makes it even more special. And yeah, like you mentioned with his backstory and his dad and all that, and him, you know, dedicating the game to Trevon Boykin and all the nice things he had to say about Boykin after the game. It was awesome, man. And yeah, he'll now be forever remembered by Frog fans.
That guy needs a bar named after him on Berry Street.
Right? Like Brahms.
Yeah, Brahms. Or maybe just Coles. Maybe down on Hewlin, he could have a store named after Coles. But oh yeah, two things that are about Kohlhausen that I wanted to say. One of which is slightly off color, so you have to forgive me. The first one is not when he took in overtime the touchdown that ended up winning the game. When he took that option and followed Noteboom's block, which if you want to watch the YouTube of that, is perfect. Notebook blocks two people, and he is able to seal, get to the edge, and get in the end zone. And then he lays the ball down, and then whatever that damn scoop I'm going to eat is that he does through the end zone is like the moment that this kid has worked 5 years to be able to get. And I was so happy to see him do that. But then the other one that is, I hesitate whether to say this, but I'm going to say it. Not the leap that got him into the end zone when we got our second touchdown, where it was the play broke down and then he went and leaped into the end zone. But the series before that, where he got the first down, where he's running to his left. And if you guys will remember, like, he winds up three big steps and leaps over a guy in order to get that first down. Do you guys remember that one? My son looked at me and he said, "That's the whitest play I've ever seen in my life."
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I'm not sure I got the right one in my mind, though.
I tried to find it on YouTube, and then I was flipping through the game and I got lost. But it was like, it was slow motion, and this dude just said, "I'm going to get this." It was the widest thing I'd ever seen. It was great. It was great. So, yeah, feel free to edit that part out if you want to, Daniel. But
all right.
Yeah. What did you see from Kohlhausen, Daniel, that made you proud of him?
Well, in the first half, I didn't see a whole lot, and I am guilty that I was one of the ones wanting him to sit down, and, you know, it just nothing was happening, and I was like, this has got to change. But There's a reason I'm not the offensive coordinator, and those other guys are. And they left him in there. And, yeah, he put on a show that I never expected to see. I'd seen him play, you know, a couple times throughout the year, and he, you know, he did all right. But he comes out, and his passes are on point, and he's, you know, he's firing bullets, and then he's scrambling around. I mean, he can run a lot better than I remembered. And like, the touchdown he gets, the short side option, then the other touchdown where he, what'd he do? He just kind of dove into the end zone, but it just, I mean, it was just, everything was just right, and it was so impressive, and, you know, and how banged up he got. I mean, he got beat down really bad, and, you know, to be able to continue to do that is just, it says so much, and it's as much as it sucks, to have the Boykin not be there, it's pretty cool that what we got to see because he wasn't there.
Yeah, it was really cool to be able to see that, and I am glad this is a story we're going to talk about going forward rather than whatever it was that happened with Trevon that I know he regrets and that we all regret, but this is a story coming out of it, and this is what it was on ABC Morning News, it was on NBC Morning News, I mean National News. Everybody is talking about this, and everybody is talking about Kolhausen. And he played football for 5 years here in college, all for being able to just do this. Good for him, man. Good for him. Well, all of us must have had a moment during the second half where we thought, this is actually going to happen. We're going to come back and either tie this game or win this game in regulation or overtime. Daniel, as you were kind of watching everything chip on the scoreboard and we chipped away at that lead, when did you think to yourself, oh my gosh, we are going to be in a position to win this game?
When we tied it, because it was such a stretch. I kept wavering. I, you know, at the very beginning I had hope, and then it would kind of be like, oh, this is too much of something to overcome. It's just too big of a whatever. And we just kept, you're right, we kept chipping away. And I don't know, I guess when we got into overtime, then I was like, I feel like we could pull this off. And I was kind of disappointed that we didn't get the 2-point conversion there at the end. When Brunton kind of just put it in the dirt. But no, man, they were able to do it, and I was, I'm trying to remember. It was such a overwhelming emotions all over the place, you know, and it, I lost my train of thought. It was good. How's that?
That's good. You can fix that, but that was good. I understand what you're saying, man.
I was up late and having a good time, and I'm tired, so.
I don't blame you. Yeah. Trey, when did you think this is actually going to happen?
And I'm just going to be completely honest. Like, I don't know if there ever was a point until that final, you know, fourth down where, you know, it got deflected down. The whole time, you know, like y'all, it kind of, you know, my hopes kind of kept building the closer we get, you know, they got, and I don't know. I just thought, you know, like I said, it's so improbable the whole time. I just didn't know. Like, I thought at some point, like, obviously, like they're not going to, you know, keep, you know, performing like they were and getting the breaks and, you know, having everything go their way. I don't know, man. I don't think I really even had a point. Like, I can't believe it. I'm still a little bit shocked.
I guess the thing that got me excited to where I realized we have a chance to do more than kind of get some moral victories in the second half is when they forced – I think it was Evans. Rico Evans forced the fumble, and then Michael Downing recovered it there on the 16-yard line after Jalen Austin had caught that touchdown pass. And right. I thought, you know, good for that kid. He's caught so much crap on message boards this year. He's the one out there playing, not some fat guy on a computer. And he's out there, and he's doing everything the coaches are asking of him. And he's playing special teams and recovers a kick. Good for him, man. that at least got me. That got me up off the couch for the I don't know if I ever sat back down after that, but that got me back up off the couch, and I was like, I think we can do something here. I didn't know if we were going to win, but I knew we weren't going to give up, and that was the hopeful thing that I think. I hope Downing feels good about what he did on that.
And he had to fight for that for a while. It wasn't like he just fell in his lap, and he happened to be the guy who recovered it. He took that ball, and you're right, for all the crap he took all year, and some of it was justified, but, man, I mean, that's really good. I'm kind of glad that he had a real bright spot to end the season.
You know, we've had some memorable seasons being TCU fans, especially in the Gary Patterson era, and, you know, we've had Fiesta Bowls and Rose Bowls and fighting for playoff spots and, you know, big wins in Oklahoma when we were just in our first year of the Mountain West. If you just step back, and we're gonna look at some in-depth stuff from the season down the road, but if you just step back and say, where does this season rank all time as a TCU fan? Where does this season fit? And it's not merely in sense of accomplishment, but what it meant to you to follow the team this year. How do you compare this to other seasons, Trey?
It's definitely a special year. It's, I would say, probably one of the, I don't know if stressful is the right word, or frustrating, or just so many weird things happen from, you know, Tua, you know, getting in a fight over, you know, Keystone or whatever, and then all of the injuries, and then, you know, it ends, you know, with Boykin getting arrested 2 days before the game, and then that miraculous comeback with the backup quarterback. And so it was definitely a weird, crazy season that, you know, I think a lot of people will always remember. And it was, you know, hell of a job by Coach Patterson to get this team to where they are. Has to be one of his best coaching jobs ever. I don't think this season, obviously not as special as the Rose Bowl season. I thought the Fiesta Bowl season was pretty cool just because, you know, that was the first time going undefeated, and, you know, obviously losing the bowl game that year sucked, though. And, you know, last year was special, too, because, you know, we didn't really have the expectations going into the season, and they had such a great year. So, you know, of recent years, it's, you know, definitely up there. But at the same time, it is kind of disappointing based on expectations that we had in preseason also. So it's just a weird season, honestly.
Yeah, the highs are really high and the lows are really low. Daniel, you've got the third generation Horned Frog fandom in your blood. How does this compare to all the years that you've followed the Frogs?
Well, it's interesting because there were so many infamous type moments that really drug you down because, like Trey was saying, you know, when you go into a season, you have such high expectations based on how we did last season, how we finished last season, and then we come into this one, you know, we're expecting to just knock it out of the park again, and you're so much more set up for disappointment there than if you have your low expectations like we did in 14. So it kind of took us all over the place because despite all that happened, all the injuries, all the weird off-the-field stuff, you know, the coaches were able to get so much done, you know, to have the record they have, to come back and beat Oregon, which is a national news kind of story because for so many reasons, like the Kohlhausen, and it was like the only fun bowl game. Everything else sucked.
They all suck. I watched them all, and they sucked.
They were terrible. So, and it's nice to be able to get in kind of a spotlight just for that. So it's so many different angles to look at it. It's really a special season in a lot of ways, but it's special in a different way, like from the Rose Bowl season, because that was, you know, if we had been in the Mountain West and then we had injuries and we came back and were winning pretty well, I just don't think that's nearly as of an accomplishment as if you do it in a Big 12 or something. So it's the time that it happened and the way that it happened and the circumstances surrounding it that really make it a memorable season And it's nice that so many things ended up on a positive note.
Yeah, my default answer is always that nothing will ever be able to touch the Rose Bowl until we win, until we get, you know, finish a regular season undefeated and get to a playoff and win that game. But, you know, I feel like so many of those seasons, whether it was way back in 2000, 2003, 2005, we were always fighting to earn respect, basically as a mid-major. We kind of had to go from a bottom feeder to a mid-mid-major to a successful mid-major to a powerhouse mid-major. Well, I don't know that we've always got disrespect factor being in the Big 12 and being a small private school. But, I mean, we had who knows how many people out. We played 30 freshmen, true or redshirt, and still went 11-2 with wins over, you know, everybody in the Big 12 except Oklahoma, Oklahoma State. We beat Baylor. We beat Oregon. Gosh, man, that is so special with everything that went through. And I'm always going to be nagged by what Trey said of the expectations. And those expectations are part of being a program like this. But going 11-2 in the Big 12 is nothing to be ashamed of. And it just gets me so much more excited looking forward to the future of the next year, which we're going to talk about down the road, and the years to come. If, you know, young people are growing up seeing, or, you know, a 15-year-old recruit watched that game last night and thinks that the hottest program around with the slickest swag got beat by TCU in the most memorable bowl game of the year. That's cool shit, man. They're going to remember that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's also good that you know, think about how we got screwed by the committee in 14. So how the Big 12 laid out their schedule for this year being so backloaded. If it wasn't backloaded like that, we would have had a terrible season, because there's no way we could, you know, overcome these good teams, I don't think. Because look how we did against SMU and SFA and such. But if we had to play a good team around there, Minnesota and all that, I just kind of realized that, you know, we'd have several more losses, I think.
And I think, you know, when you look at it, it's going to be another top 10 finish for the Frogs, another bowl game win. Like you said, you know, going 11-2 in the Big 12 is nothing to be ashamed of. And when you look around the state, you know, why a recruit would want to commit anywhere else, I don't quite understand it. Maybe it's my purple glasses, and I will give, you know, Baylor a little bit of credit. They do have, you know, strung together some winning seasons here, but they still are in Waco. So it's like, I would never go voluntarily live in Waco for 4 years. So when you look at the campus, you look at, you know, you get a great education. You have a great head coach, a legendary head coach. You've got a new stadium. You've got great facilities. You've got it all. You've got winning record year after year. I mean, I just don't understand why a recruit would look at A&M. I guess some of them get infatuated with the swag copters, or, you know, they get infatuated with playing at a program like Texas that's so big and all that. But, like, damn, man, I don't know. I just don't see how you could pass up TCU and what they have to offer.
I saw that some big 4-star offensive lineman, Adam Skeet, committed to Texas the other day, and I'm like, dude, what the hell? I mean, why are you going to jump on that? I mean, you gotta, I'm tired of saying I respect Charlie Strong. Charlie Strong's a loser. He hasn't been able to win in Texas, and he's not going to win. He's a freaking loser. He's a good coach in Louisville. He's a good guy if he's dating your daughter, but he's a loser. I mean, he has not won anything at a school that, like, keeps $100 bills underneath the couch. I mean, that place is loaded, and he can't win. And I don't know why anybody in the world wants to go play for him for one more year, because he's going to get fired. So, yeah, I'm with you, Trey. You don't have to have purple-colored glasses. And you can respect the win that Baylor got in the program that they're building. But why anybody is not wanting to consider TCU seriously is just redonkulous. And I think we're going to continue to see that change slowly. But it's just a perception battle that we're always going to be fighting. We're up against the SEC booster machine that the Aggies let into the state, and all that stuff is real. So over time, I think we're going to continue. This is our best recruiting class we've ever had that we'll be signing in February. So hopefully we'll be able to have a show to talk about that. Go! 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 good thing that TCU won and Baylor won and West Virginia won our bowl games, because the rest of the conference did not look good at all in their bowl games. Just really quick here with some quick hits. Oklahoma got beat by Clemson. It all caught up with them with never having to face a good quarterback. Did either one of you two get to watch that game?
I watched a lot of it, or maybe half to two-thirds or so. But as Oklahoma kept falling apart, I was paying less and less attention. And it was embarrassing. They sucked. It was awful.
Did you have to work on New Year's Eve, either two of you guys? Were you able to watch the Oklahoma game, Trey?
Yeah, I didn't have to work. And, I watched it. Probably 2 weeks ago, I was rooting for Oklahoma to win that game. And then Baker Mayfield started opening his mouth. And then how they handled, you know, the media days and all of that stuff. I'd started rooting for Clemson. So I guess I was kind of happy to see Clemson beat them down, even though I guess it would have helped the conference. But, yeah, I watched it. And I guess personally, I didn't have anything to do on New Year's Eve because I was getting up early the next day to drive down to Austin and then on to San Antonio or whatever. So I was fine with it. I was like, hey, this is great. I'm sitting home watching football. And I'm not a big New Year's Eve fan to begin with. So I guess it doesn't really bother me too much, but I could see how other people would be annoyed with it.
Yeah, the viewership was down 30 to 40%. From last year, so I think they're gonna have to do something because ESPN is paying billions of dollars to have those games. And
oh, man, I love them losing money. That's great.
That doesn't bother me at all. But they're gonna have to do something. real quick, Trey, you touched on it. Any more thoughts on Mayfield trying to throw Coach Patterson under the bus?
Well, it's one. I guess to me, I thought the timing of it was weird. You know, you're a couple days away from playing the biggest game of your life, and you're talking about the coach at TCU who doesn't like you and, you know, you're disrespected or whatever. Like Coach Patterson said, like, all the 128 other teams didn't offer you a scholarship either. Like,
including Bob Stoops.
Yeah. Your own coach didn't offer you a scholarship. Like,
Franchione at Texas State didn't offer you a scholarship.
Like, I mean, so feel disrespected if you want or whatever, but it's like, I think you tweeted it out, like, Boykin didn't have, he had those two scholarship offers or whatever it is. Like, he doesn't walk around saying, I'm disrespected. Like, he goes out and handles
it. Okay, Bill Snyder.
Yeah, like, what the hell is that even, like, about? And, I mean, I cracked me up to see Patterson's comments back at him. I was like, whoa, I didn't like expect Patterson to go kind of in on him like that. But I thought it was great. Like, what are you? I just didn't think it made sense for Mayfield at all. Like, it was stupid.
Yeah, that showed with it. That's when I knew they were going to get beat. I'm like, dude, if you've been sitting on this waiting to unload on that, that means your mind is not on how to break down the Clemson defense. Sure does make that home game in early October a big target for TCU Oklahoma. Oh, that's going to be nice. Just really quick, we don't have to break these down at all, but Oklahoma State got steamrolled by Ole Miss. That was ugly. That was ugly. That might be the reason the Big 12 might want to look at that tiebreaker rule. Kansas State gets beat by Arkansas, and Texas Tech gets run over by LSU. All of those losses, big losses, very few of them were really competitive. Closest one to being competitive was Oklahoma Clemson game, and that was three touchdowns by the end. But then at least Baylor was able to win, beat North Carolina. West Virginia won a crazy game. I stayed up and watched it because I was so damn wired that night after watching the TCU Oregon game. So 3-4 for the Big 12. Not great, but not a total embarrassment. One game improvement from last year. Oh well, we're not the Big 10, but we're not the SEC in terms of bowl games. Because all I want to say is one word, and you guys try not to laugh. Iowa.
Yeah, oh God, that was bad.
That was.
I mean, everybody knew they shouldn't have been there to begin with.
No.
I love McCaffrey, though, man. I love the way that kid plays the game. He's awesome to watch.
I think he should have won a Heisman. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that dude's a baller.
I like the dude standing next to McCaffrey in the post-game interview.
That was funny.
Screaming the Heisman stats. So. Yeah, I grew up in Iowa. I have a lot of friends that are Iowa fans. I mean, they're nice people. It's a good small place to raise a family. If you like corn and, you know, chicken fried steak, it's a great spot. But their overinflated view of their football program is one of the three most annoying things in my life. And, oh, my gosh, that was – I had been waiting all year for them to actually play a team with a pulse, and they just got crushed. And, you know, the best team they played all year, Michigan State, just got annihilated by Alabama in the semifinal as well. So one of these days we can finally admit that the Big Ten is just so freaking overrated. It actually drives the only reason I think we should expand is because look at Iowa. They didn't play anybody, and they're literally one play away from being in the playoff. So might not be what's good for the product and what's good for but it might be what's good for getting you to the playoff. So well, guys, anything else you want to share as we wrap up this post-Alamo Bowl episode? Anything of note?
No, just it was awesome. I still, like I said, having a hard time believe it. I went to the Rose Bowl, which was great. The Fiesta Bowl, which wasn't so great. And this was the third bowl game I went to, and I mean, it's definitely memorable. I won't forget it.
Yeah.
I remember I was like, thank God I didn't go spend thousands of dollars to go get just embarrassed. And then at the end of the game, I was pissed that I didn't go and spend thousands of dollars because that would have been just probably would have been the best game I'd ever been to.
Yeah, people have talked about it's one of the best bowl games they've ever seen. It's clearly the best bowl game of this bowl season. So, yeah, next year, Daniel, you need to go. We're gonna put you on the spot right now. Start pinching pennies. We need you to be at one of the playoff games next year when TCU gets there. So,
well, okay.
Yeah. Well, we want to give you a preview next episode, which will be a couple weeks from right now. We are gonna do a farewell episode to the seniors of this class. We're going to honor and recognize those that gave years of their life and of their study and their effort and their sweat to TCU. We're going to look at some memorable moments, especially from some of these big guys that really made a name for themselves here at TCU in these last few years, especially these last two seasons, as well as maybe, you know, tinker around the edges of projecting forward. You know, who's going to step up and replace Aaron Green? Who's going to step up and replace Josh Doctson and Trevon Boykin? And, you know, Jaden Overcrum, who is going to be the most dependable kicker in the history of the Big 12 for us going forward, replacing him? That and a whole lot more that we're going to look at in our next episode here on the Frogcast in a couple weeks. Well, fellas, as always, it is great to get back together and celebrate a Horned Frog victory. 47-41, triple overtime, TCU over Oregon. For Trey and for Daniel, I am Jeff. Thanks for listening to the Frogcast.